Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lu, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Another big day for the Golden State Warriors. They had another marquee matchup. Actually, I would argue their second one of the year total against the LA Clippers. Huge first quarter, huge overall game. They win 115-98, and I knew exactly who I wanted to talk to about this like a week ago, and we ended up making the time to do it at 1 a.m. because he had some other work stuff to do, and I'm basically always awake, and that is Adam Lauritsen. He runs the Fast Break blog for the San Jose Mercury News, and a connoisseur of the Warriors-Clippers rivalry, and so much else with this team. And so we talked for a little while. We talked for about like 40 minutes about this game and moving forward and a lot of other stuff. I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Almost exactly 2 months ago, you and I did a podcast after the Warriors annihilated the Clippers at Oracle, and we talked. I remember talking about how, you know, it was notable in some senses, but that we needed to see it in the regular season. Well, we've seen it now.
Yep, now we've seen it, and we keep on talking about the Warriors-Clippers rivalry, and I think rivalry is still the right name for it because there was clearly bad blood tonight. There was clearly a sense that these are two teams that don't like each other. But you have rivalries that are significant because the games are so competitive. And then you have rivalries that are significant because one team just continually throttles the other. And the Warriors-Clippers have now moved into that latter category where, for a variety of reasons, the Warriors just completely have the Clippers' number. They're in their heads. And we saw another absolutely dominant performance tonight from the Warriors.
I feel like it's more enmity than a rivalry at this point. And that can change, and I'm sure Clippers fans will point to the fact that, you know, they did beat the Warriors in the one playoff series they played against each other. I don't even need to explain why I hate that rationale, because it's stupid. But the whole concept is basically that a rivalry is based on not equality, but just sort of balanced outcomes. And the Clippers are a great team. I am in no way denigrating them as a regular season entity or anything else. I just have immense trouble putting them in the same category, if we're talking about title contenders or anything like that, as the team that played them tonight.
Yeah, you just look at matchups. It's as simple as Paul and Blake. The Clippers' two best players are thoroughly outplayed every single time they play the Warriors by two of the Warriors players. Curry has had no problem with Paul, and Draymond just absolutely destroyed Blake tonight and reduced him to just sort of sputtering around the court. So when you have that combination, it's really hard to figure out a way in which the Clippers beat the Warriors on any given night, let alone across a seven-game series.
And one of the stats that I kind of thought about during the game and then looked up after the game was the Warriors' stars, their scorers, didn't have a great night offensively. Like, they did a lot of other things well. This was easily Curry's best defensive game of the year. Draymond was great defensively. Also, he's not one of the scoring stars. But Curry, Thompson, and Durant were a combined 20 of 51 from the field and a combined 4 of 19 from 3. And those were not the Clippers doing a great job defensively. They've been a top 5 defense the whole year. That was just those shots not going in, kind of like against the Lakers, but they had a much stronger base of transition offense because of all the steals.
Yeah, I think that this was a nice carryover from Klay's 60-point game, because Klay's huge scoring outburst was made possible by a lot of movement off the ball, a lot of great passing, a lot of sort of lackadaisical or sloppy defense. And we saw the same combination tonight, but instead of all the points being funneled to Klay, it was the entire team sharing the opportunities. They did a great job getting really high percentage looks at the rim, in the paint, from mid-range. They had an awful night from three, and it just didn't matter. And that's rare for the Warriors to have a blowout in that situation, let alone against a team that has as much talent as the Clippers. So whether they've just kind of reached another level and coalescing as a team, whether there's been additional focus on their offense during practice, something's happened here, because we've seen a team the last couple games that's looked a level better, I think, in terms of their offensive system than what we saw at the beginning of the season.
They've also gotten more responsible with the ball. That was something Durant talked about. I asked about the idea, not after this game, but after Clay's game against the Pacers, about whether they had another, you know, whether they could move offensively. And the thing he pointed to was turnovers. And Nate and I talked about that on the post-game show after that game, when the Warriors just getting more offensive possessions because of how effective they are. Getting more shots up makes a meaningful difference. And in this game, they were able to build that base. I talked about this a minute ago, but getting so many live ball turnovers in the first quarter, they had 6 steals and turned that into a bunch of fast break points. And those types of things are unsustainable if you are facing the Warriors, because their half-court offense, while not perfect, is good enough to do that. And generally, when you get transition points, you don't have to play transition defense, so the Warriors get that benefit as well.
Yeah, during that really great defensive stretch in the first quarter, the Warriors had, what, I think a 20-2 run or something in that range.
Something like that. And they were also 13-4 run when Spates was on the floor, which was one of those big stretches. And we talked about it on the Twitter NBA show, but it's very amusing when you see a player go against his old team. Like, we all like talking about revenge games, but there's also the other way, which is that you have these guys, especially in the case of Spates, been on the team for years, very popular guy, but they knew all his tricks. And so they knew what to put him in defensively. Iguodala had that great strip of him. And I thought that 13-4 stretch really solidified that lead at that moment in time. And I don't think you'll disagree with me, but from that point on, I always felt like when the Clippers were coming back, that it was a temporary condition. And that is, again, not a slight on the Clippers. I didn't think they had it in them to win this game.
Yeah, this game felt over at the end of the first quarter. The Warriors were so dominant after that initial sort of ugly stretch, and they just ripped apart the Clippers at both ends of the court. And from that point on, it just didn't seem like Los Angeles was going to have what they needed to compete for the night. There were a couple runs, like you said, but it never really felt like they were going to be able to put anything together. It just felt like the Warriors had lost focus. And that was one of the things that impressed me the most in the first quarter. We knew that the Warriors had circled this game, given what the Clippers had said, given what other people in the media had said. This was obviously an opportunity for the Warriors to make a statement. And we haven't seen many of those games so far this season. You know, San Antonio to open the season obviously was one, and the Warriors completely sort of failed that test. The Oklahoma City game, obviously they had a chance to make a statement there, but that was more individual rather than team competition. So I was really curious to see how the team came out. They came out a little bit tight. They sputtered a little bit. But then Draymond had that burst on defense where he yelled at his teammates and sort of seemed to snap everybody into a different level. And from that point on to the end of the first quarter, it was just a different team than we've seen, I think, at any other point in the season. The offense wasn't as hot as it had been sometimes, but they were so methodical. And like you said, the defense just clamped down and fed into so many easy baskets. It just had this sense of inevitability by the end of the quarter, which was really impressive.
My game analysis piece for The Athletic starts with the idea that this was only the Warriors' second game against a legitimate title contender. And you could define that in a couple of different ways, but for me, it's the Cavs, the Spurs, the Clippers, and, you know, really that's about it for right now. Of course, the Warriors, but they can't play themselves. And, you know, some people would throw Toronto in there. I wouldn't. And they haven't even played the Jazz yet. The Jazz also aren't even healthy. And the first game, as you said, they failed it. Like that game, the Spurs outplayed them top to bottom. Jonathan Simmons had a great game. He's fallen off since then. They had a lot of great performances. The Warriors came out flat. Tonight, the Warriors acted like they cared. And it was so notable to people, I think we're both in this camp, that have been saying that the Warriors have been coasting, you know, as good as their record is, that they've been coasting for a lot of this regular season, because you can just point to that first half and go, see? This is something entirely different. And it has to be noted that the Clippers missed some shots that they usually make. Chris Paul missed a couple. JJ Redick only took 4 shots in this game, which is a testament to how awesome Klay Thompson played on defense. He fought through everything. And, you know, Blake missed some shots he usually does, but the Warriors' first shot defense, which is something I've started focusing on more after, incidentally, Durant talked about it early in the season, their first shot defense in this game was incredible.
Yeah, they were just at a whole different speed, and they were really tight. It had that feeling like they were sort of all connected on a string like they had been in the past when we'd seen them at their best defensive performances. Compare this to the way that the team looked for the first 44 minutes of the Houston game. Totally different appearance in terms of their intensity, how fast they were moving, how hard they were challenging. So obviously different teams, different strengths, but what we saw tonight, I think, is what the Warriors have the potential to be in games that really matter. And so for the rest of the NBA, they've been put on notice. This is what the Warriors could do to arguably one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the NBA. I think we're all going to just be counting down the days now until Christmas, because the Cleveland matchup is going to give us another opportunity, and maybe our best opportunity, to see really what this team can do.
In the first 3 quarters, the Clippers had 11 assists and the Warriors had 11 steals. That is a testament of a lot of things. Curry had 7.
Yep, he nearly beat them himself.
And that's there are a lot of things that go into that. I think of that line on The Simpsons about how it takes 2 to lie, 1 to lie, and 1 to listen. But that is really sometimes how it happens with steals. Like, there were a few plays where the Clippers threw passes they absolutely shouldn't have, especially Blake. Blake threw a couple of these cross-court passes that work against some teams, especially in the regular season, but will never fly in the playoffs and will never fly against the Warriors. And some of that was frustration. I think I would argue that this was the worst game I've ever seen Blake Griffin play, which is full credit to Draymond Green and everyone else. He was 4 of 17 from the field. He had 7 turnovers. He had 8 rebounds, which is fine. You know, like, that's all right. But it's just Blake Griffin. Actually, sorry, he was 5 of 20. I was looking at the first 3 quarters because that's the competitive portion of this game. And the Warriors just did a great job on him, and they have exactly the right personnel now, because they have Draymond, who can do that. But also, I thought the helpers did a nice job. Everyone did a nice job.
Yeah, I think to take the 2 separate points there, first, give Draymond a ton of credit for why Blake was frustrated in drawing those passes in the first place. If Draymond doesn't go to work in the first quarter, in the first half, and really kind of get in Blake's head, Blake's not thinking that he needs to pass out of those situations as immediately, and he's not throwing those passes that Curry and others get to pick off. But second, I think your point about the help was really good. We saw some nice runs tonight where they got physical play from David West. Zaza gave them a few good minutes, maybe not in the second quarter, but I thought he was pretty effective at times in the first and third quarters. And even JaVale came in, and I think while Kerr seemed reluctant to use him in the first half, he gave him some solid minutes, some good contributions in the second half.
The Warriors are going to have to spend some time over the next couple months figuring out how they want to use all these big men, and it was interesting to see West play in the first quarter. The Warriors' rotations actually got kind of messed up in that first, just because of the way everything was going. It certainly didn't hurt them, but it was weird to see the stagger not really in full effect, to see David West in the first quarter, but you can't really argue with the results, and part of the reason that ended up happening was because they knew West was a good person to take advantage of Spates, but the best decision that Kerr made during that stretch was JaVale was about to check in, and I saw this from Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, the benefit of being there in person for him, was that McGay was going to check in, and Kerr realized what was happening, pulled him and put in Ian Clark, and that just meant Spates had nowhere to be.
Yeah, the option to go small earlier in the game is something that Kerr's been reluctant to do. We typically see a little bit of the small lineup at the end of the second quarter. I think as the Warriors play better opponents and as they go deeper into the season, you're going to see more and more of him throwing that option earlier, because it's just such an effective lineup. Whether it's the typical death lineup, whether it's Clark, whether it's Livingston, whatever combination you want to throw in there, when this team goes small, it puts every other opponent on their heels. I don't think we've seen a single opponent that could beat the small team at full strength consistently.
It also gives them, not that they needed it in this game, a jolt of energy, because it's such a different challenge that it engages everybody, because they know it's a team effort. That's part of the reason it's so physically and mentally exhausting for them, is that, you know, you have to engage in that way. And it is, in many ways, more a mentality than anything else, but they have shown that they can handle it when they need to. And this game really did clarify for me just how few, I'm guessing, the Warriors have circled on their calendars, because this looked different. You know, the Spurs game was the Spurs game. And there is an idea that Nate and I talked about a lot last year, where using the death lineup was a show of respect. And it might even be more basic this year. The Warriors acting like they really care is a show of respect.
Yeah, I think it's a whole nother level. And I don't blame the Warriors for easing up against these other teams. I think that last year taught them that they need to be mentally fresh and they need to be physically fresh when the playoffs arrive. You don't want to get into bad habits, and it's on Kerr and the coaching staff to make sure that they stay focused enough that they're adopting the things they need to into their game. They're perfecting, they're getting tighter as a team, but you can do that without going out and killing yourself every single night. And as long as there are these periodic opportunities for them to test and see what they can actually muster when they really are motivated and at full strength, it's not a bad approach for getting through the season. What's going to be interesting, I think, is just how the schedule is spread out. I think we talked one of the earlier games about how the San Antonio matchups are now all the back half of the season. They're only going to see Cleveland twice. I guess they have the Clippers three more times, but it's up for debate how competitive those games are going to be, if they're more like the first two Clippers games we saw.
And depending on how you want to define the Eastern Conference, they don't play at Toronto again. They don't play at Boston again. So they'll have both those teams at home. So it's a narrow list, and they're playing Utah tomorrow in a game that I was really excited about. I'm a big believer in Utah, but it's already been announced that George Hill, Rodney Hood aren't playing in that game. And at this point, you know, the Warriors already made their statement. They could lose it. I don't expect them to, but they already did what they needed to here. It's going to be fun if you haven't heard this. Have you heard Mo Spates' comments after the game?
I have, yeah.
I'm just going to read it verbatim, because it is a great encapsulation. And having covered Mo for a couple of years, I didn't expect it to come in this form, but it doesn't surprise me that he was the voice of this for the Clippers. But it does a great job of encapsulating where they need to get to from where they are right now. And while this isn't Locked On Clippers, it's great schadenfreude for Warriors fans who, by and large, hate the crap out of the Clippers. But also because it illustrates the difference between these two teams. So Spates was asked what the Clippers have to do to reach championship level. I'm getting this from Bill Oram, who's a great writer down in LA, and he writes for the OC Register, just like Dan Wojcicki. And he said, Spates, this is the exact quote: "First, we need to start really just leave the refs alone. Guys just gotta sacrifice, do some other things than scoring. Do some other things than your personal goals. Just try something new. They've been doing it here for 4 or 5 years, and it hasn't been working, so it's time to try something new."
Yeah, you can't put it better than that. I still miss Mo. I always had a very soft spot for Mo. It's tough to see him in a Clippers uniform, but he's someone who was part of two very winning teams and knows what it takes to reach that level. So there's nobody who's better qualified on the Clippers right now to call them out on what they're missing.
I don't know how big, especially considering the final margin, the Chris Paul technical early in the game was, but it certainly set a tone. And at a very basic level, and Warriors fans probably know this more from Draymond, having an adversarial relationship with the referees serves no genuine purpose that I can discern.
Yeah, I was surprised that they actually called that technical, because Paul has done that so much and he gets away with it. From the vantage that I saw on TV, it looked like he made contact with the ref and then kept talking to the ref. Most people would get technicals for that or get fined in some way afterwards. So I'm glad to see the equal standard being applied. And I do think that it changes the dynamic, both in the sense that the Clippers maybe think, you know, we're not going to get away with as much tonight as we might otherwise get away with. And it also, I think, empowers the Warriors to know that they're going to have a level playing field. It keeps them from being too in their heads and too obsessed about the refs. It sort of puts them at ease.
It also changed the way Chris Paul had to think about the game, because playing almost the entire thing with a tech, when you are essential, when you are an MVP candidate for your team, is very different. You know, Draymond's had that a couple of times. He's gotten early texts, and it does affect it. And that means that you have to use other outlets when you're frustrated, and the Warriors gave him plenty of reasons to be frustrated in this game. So it all did kind of feed together. And one of the big problems for the Clippers, more in the regular season than the playoffs, was their bench lineup. And yes, Raymond Felton missed this game due to personal reasons. He has death in the family, which is a shame. But the Clippers have an interesting philosophy, which I actually think more teams should do, which is that they have a bench lineup that basically has no good defenders in it. Wes Johnson has potential, but he's not at this point. Austin Rivers gets hyped. He's all right, but he's not a good defender. He's, you know, capable. That can work against 90% of the NBA. However, one of the teams it cannot work against is the Warriors when they are staggering Kevin Durant. And Doc is very much about rhythm and comfort and player happiness, but I think we all saw that coming as being this like defining point in the game, and guess what? It was.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I tweeted out during the game that I'm surprised with how consistent Doc's approach is to the Warriors. He basically plays them the same way and he has for the last 3 years, despite the fact that the Warriors have dominated those matchups. They've won 7 in a row now. And it's curious to me that he hasn't tried to find a way to switch up, whether it's how he uses Paul or how he tries to get Blake involved or Jordan. It just seems like rolling out the same rotation, the same approach, the same lineup against a team that has been regularly dominant, it's not going to change anything. You know, you go in with the same input, you're going to get the same output. So one of these days, it's going to be interesting to see if Doc finally changes things up.
There are two things that they really have to start doing more that they actually use better against other teams. One is going to a more switch-happy defense. It will create mismatches for the Warriors a lot, but at least you don't create the seams that create the open looks that the Warriors are getting now. It's not a perfect solution, but it helps a lot of things. The other one is getting a little bit more out of DeAndre Jordan offensively, running those high pick and rolls. He has so much gravity going to the rim, and there were times that actually really helped Chris Paul. Chris Paul was getting his fadeaway mid-range shot, which, you know, nominally, if you want to talk Morey ball, is not the greatest shot in the world, but when you make it as much as he does, those kind of numbers don't matter as much, because if you make it 50% of the time or 60% of the time, that's still a pretty high EV shot. And all of those things run together, but the Clippers have a fundamental problem that I don't know how they fix, which is that Chris and Blake and DeAndre are all wonderful players, but they all kind of need to play together because they make each other better. And if you want to stagger Blake, I support that in most circumstances, including against the Warriors, but they don't have a Blake replacement. They can throw in Wes Johnson. They can do some other stuff like they tried to in the regular season last year after Blake's injuries and then suspension. But they don't have enough, and that is the real consequence that the Warriors need to learn from about being in the luxury tax and being on those fringes for a lot of years in a row. You have to hit on more things than the Clippers, and they actually did a nice job building their bench this year. It's just your degree of difficulty for building a team when you're at that razor's edge is the degree of difficulty is just so high.
Yeah, you have to make a lot out of not very much, whether it's second-round picks or veteran men free agents. You have to find a way to scrap together stuff, or else you'll end up like the Clippers or worse, being depleted.
Yeah,
but back to the point about you.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you go.
Just about Jordan on offense. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that there was a single lob tonight that Jordan converted points. He got a couple putbacks.
And I think he drew a foul on one, but that's a different thing.
Right. But for all the discussion about the Warriors not having a rim protector, it's pretty impressive that they were able to put up enough defensive adjustments or, you know, whatever changes you want to focus on to keep Jordan off the glass. And it's also a big problem for the Clippers that they weren't able to run that in their offense and generate that with Paul off the sets, getting Jordan some clean runs at the rim.
The Clippers also have a big problem against the Warriors because they've been doing a lot. This happened against in their loss to the Pacers. They actually lost the Pacers twice in the last 2 weeks. But when Paul George had come back and they were a little bit behind, I think they were like 8 points behind in that game. And their go-to lineup in those circumstances is CP, JJ Redick, and Jamal Crawford all playing together. again, one of those things that can work against 90% of NBA teams. It didn't come into play in this game, but it absolutely would not work against the Warriors.
Yeah, there's just there's nowhere to hide against the Warriors. I mean, every team is going to have to deal with this. The Cavs are going to have to deal with this. The Warriors really do have the ability to test your weakest link defensively. So when you put a team out there like Paul, Redick, and Crawford, you're going to have major issues controlling the Warriors' wing players. And I think that we saw that tonight even without that lineup, that the Warriors were able to run, they were able to get into the open space, and the Clippers just didn't have the defensive adjustments. So that's what's so fascinating about watching this team coalesce and watching the effort tonight, is that they're not just hanging out around the three-point line, shooting those great shots, they're high percentage shots for these players because they're amazing shooters. They're now attacking and getting even better shots in ways that are really demoralizing for their opponents.
Maybe the most surprising part of this game from the Clippers' perspective was that Luke Richard and Mbamute defensively did a very nice job on Durant, got him out of rhythm, part of the reason he started the game so slowly. And then Mbamute was basically out of the rotation. It was one of those things. Doc thought they needed offense, so they went to Jamal. They went to Austin Rivers. They went to all those guys. And I'm just sitting there going, yeah, that's true. But you also need to get stops in order to win this. Like, you need to have both things happen. And it is amazing to me that Doc is so willing to turn in that direction when he doesn't have a two-way option.
Yeah, and looking at this team, this team being the Clippers, they don't have enough firepower to really say, okay, we're going to go toe-to-toe with the Warriors and try to outscore them. This isn't D'Antoni's Rockets. So it was an interesting consideration, and I think it's one that backfired. It's one of those changes where if Doc is going to try to get a different result, he's probably got to look at a different way to approach it.
Is your biggest takeaway from this game just how good the Warriors can play when they're engaged?
Yeah, same as you. They cared. The first quarter tonight was the first time in a long time I've seen the Warriors look start to finish for an extended period like they were really engaged. And it was pretty mind-blowing to see it come together.
Also, just about everyone had a good defensive game. Lots of guys had shaky offensive nights, but just about everybody had a good defensive game. Also, I think this was, off the top of my head, the best passing night Curry's had this regular season. He made not in terms of assist numbers, but just degree of difficulty and seeing pass. He had that gorgeous bounce pass. I think it was to Draymond. It was to somebody. It was just like, oh yeah, that's right. He can do this. And he has that talent within him, and he was 0-for-8 from 3. That would have been a much bigger deal if the Lakers game hadn't happened. But defensively, they were just on fire.
Yeah, the Curry passing point's a really good one. A lot of those steals that the Warriors turned into baskets were off some pretty high difficulty passes from Curry that resulted in shots that looked really easy. So it wasn't just that, oh, they got a steal, they got a free run at the rim. No, it was Curry got a steal, and he put them in a position by reading the court and making a pass to get a really easy basket. So you don't want to overlook things like that, because there are plenty of teams that could get those steals and then try to force some sort of two-on-one situation, bungle it, not get points out of it. The Warriors were converting those with incredible consistency, and that's really what demoralizes a team, those points off turnovers.
I was surprised, I guess I just didn't see this much during the game, but that the Warriors starters had 20 free throw attempts in the game, which was substantially more than the Clippers did, but how balanced it was. So Durant was 5-for-6 from the line, Draymond 3-for-4, Klay and Steph both 5-for-5. And it didn't, to me, seem like there were that many fouls in this game other than that stretch where DeAndre Jordan was getting offensive rebounds and getting fouled.
Yeah, I think that it's just a tribute to the Warriors running at the rim and getting really good looks close to the basket. They're just situations where somebody's catching the ball and immediately going up, and the Clippers have no choice but to foul, or they're backed under their own basket and they're trapped in it. So it's not a dramatic play, but it adds up over the course of the game. Exactly like you said, they ended up having 20 attempts for the starters, which is great productivity in terms of free throws.
Is there anything you're looking forward to in the Jazz game on Thursday night?
The Jazz, obviously, with their athletic bigs, it's a great opportunity to see if a team is really going to try to bully the Warriors down low and just absolutely control the glass, control the paint, and dominate that aspect of the game. The Jazz, I think, are as qualified as anyone to do that. With their backcourt issues, obviously it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them because they're not going to be as balanced in their attack. But I'm really curious to see how the Warriors handle it, particularly if they're shorthanded. Do they try to go small and counter it that way? Do they try to match it with big players? And how effective are both the smalls and the bigs at really setting the tone of the game and not letting the Jazz on their home court dominate and control?
Kevin Durant has a real opportunity if he wants to shore up his reputation as a one-on-one defender. Gordon Hayward has been great since he's been back this year. Definite all-star contender. I mean, the West all-star is just insane. But he has that capability, and Iguodala could do well on Hayward, and they'll probably go to that at certain moments. But if Durant can start the game there, especially considering Hayward will shoulder so much of the playmaking burden, they're probably going to start Dante Exum, which I'm actually also really excited to see Exum on Curry, because Exum is, he's long, but he's not strong. It's an unusual combination for guys. It's more like Corey Brewer in that way. And I want to see how Curry does in that. And also just going against the trees, Favors isn't going to play, but Rudy Gobert is going to be in there. And Utah is a very deep team, probably not deep enough to really put a charge into this one, other than that the Warriors are on a back-to-back and go into elevation. But how they handle just the unusual nature of that, guys like Joe Johnson, who's on their team now, and Shelvin Mack has done some pretty nice stuff this year. So it's an exciting game to me. It lost a lot of luster with Hill and Hood and Favors being out, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, we'll get to see him again later in the season. And given that the Warriors are on a back-to-back and that there's an emotional letdown probably off this game,
they could definitely lose.
Best comparison. Yeah, I think that this is a risky game on the schedule. But again, they just need to stay up there at the top of the West. So they're going to drop some of these, and that's fine. That's part of the regular season.
One small thing that bothers me, I don't know. I'd have to ask players if this is something they consider, but I don't like it when teams play games that start less than 24 hours after the prior game started. Like, I'm fine with it if it's two games that are at the same time or something like that. And, like, for example, when the Rockets, granted that was a nasty travel, when they played the Warriors and then went to Denver, they actually started that Denver game later. It started at the same time as the Warriors game did. And so they lose, not only do they lose an hour in travel time, but they also, it starts, I think it's like an hour and a half earlier than the game did tonight.
Yeah, I think it has to be disruptive. If on sleep time alone, getting in late and having to get up in the morning for shoot around or for team functions, it's definitely going to cut into it. But physically, there were some guys who played decent minutes tonight. Thompson played 35 minutes. He had to run quite a bit guarding Redick. Draymond had a physical game, played over 30 minutes. Iguodala looked really bouncy, but played 25 minutes and 25 physical minutes as well. So all of those minutes, I think, make recovery in less than 24 hours a bit difficult. And if you're facing a physical team like the Jazz can be, that's a challenge.
Also, Sean Livingston playing 17 and a half, that's pretty close to where you want him in the regular season. Like, that's on the higher end of it. So they might be relying more on the pups tomorrow. We'll see. But one other just piece of context, as much as I don't care that much about the regular season, though home court does matter, just for where the Warriors are right now. So the Warriors are 19-3. Spurs are 18-4, which is incredible, especially when they're undefeated on the road. Right now, the Clippers are the next team, and they're at 7 losses. Like, we're getting close to the point where it's a two-team race for the top seed in the East, barring injury. Or seed in the West, barring injury.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing, is that you don't know if San Antonio is going to fall off. So the Warriors could be in a situation where just to get home court advantage in the Western Conference, they're going to have to be an 11, 12, 13 loss team for the season. It's pretty incredible. We'll see if the Spurs can hang in there.
I think they're going to fall personally, especially because Pop doesn't care. So they'll have that. But they're also, it's the same story that was true last year, though it's different. They're a very different good team than they were last year. But they have so much depth and so much talent that they win games they shouldn't win just because they're good, which is something the Warriors do as well. Like, I think back to the game the Warriors won in Phoenix. Like, they played pretty badly in that game and still won. The Celtics game, they played a little bit better, but they have those types of games, and the Spurs can do that too. And, you know, I'm excited to see how they manage everything, because they have so many guys and they have a lot of prideful players like Powell and Tony that should not play as much as they do. But we're only 22 games in, and I'm already starting to think about it. And what I like about this Warriors team, I've talked about this a little bit before, but you can do that split. You can talk about how exciting the playoffs are and all the nuances with that, while still appreciating these games, especially tonight, for what they are.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've been pretty open in saying that I think the regular season matters a lot less this year, and that the team's not going to take it as seriously and as aggressively. But then look at what happened Monday night. On any given game, you could have something spectacular happen with this team. You have Klay go absolutely nuts on just a random game that nobody circled on their calendar. You have a game like tonight, which we know is going to be significant. And again, it's just a thrilling performance by the team early on. So while the regular season may not be as significant for the players and the team in terms of how they approach every single game, it's still going to be wildly entertaining. And just to talk about the Spurs too, and how that's going to shake out for the rest of the season, I worry they're going to be right there with the Warriors till the end for reasons you listed, but also just because of the competition in the West. You put the Spurs up against all the other teams that the Warriors are looking at, and I think that they match up extremely well. Their defense is so consistent, and Pop gets so much out of guys who could be marginal players on other teams, that over the course of an 82-game season, like you said, they're going to win a lot of games that they probably don't deserve to on just sort of paper, just based on their experience and their defensive intensity. So the Warriors have their work cut out for them, even if the regular season isn't the end-all be-all this year.
I'm just looking through their schedule, seeing how many times they play a good team and the Spurs are on the tail end of a back-to-back, because those are kind of the hallmark games for them, because they don't care. They'll sit their guys. They have a couple. They play at Portland on a back-to-back. They play at Toronto on a back-to-back. The Warriors should hope that they lose those games. But the other crazy, crazy thing is, I don't think home court matters that much in that series. I mean, it certainly helps. The Warriors are good with it. It's a reason they pressed last year. But there is a very significant chance now, especially as big a fan as I am of Utah, if they can be at full strength, that other than home court in the final round, I would rather be the 2 seed than the 1.
To avoid playing which team?
Utah. And maybe maybe Houston, just because I think that's a line of separation, is Utah and Houston. Portland's good, especially considering what happened last year. I wouldn't worry about them, you know, in a 7-game series if the Warriors are healthy. And OKC, same basic story. Memphis would be an intensely unfun series, but at the same point, I wouldn't be too concerned about the outcome if I were the Warriors.
Yeah, it's too early with the injuries for me to really get a sense of how everything's going to shake out. You know, Memphis is dealing with injury issues. Utah has a lot of lingering injuries. Anything can happen in the course of the season. So I think you still push for the number one slot. But as the Warriors learned last year, if you end up with a physical first-round series or one that drains you, that carries through the rest of the playoffs. You know, if not for the flop sweat there in Houston, we probably would have seen a very different playoffs from the Warriors. So if you can get out with an easy first-round opponent, that is a nice boost going through the rest of the playoffs.
And as somebody who covers the Warriors but covers the whole league, I'm excited to see how this shakes out in the West, because barring injuries, I think we already know the 8 teams. I think we know who they are, but the order is going to change dramatically, and how all that fits together is going to be worth watching, not only in March, which is when some people start caring about it. I think it's going to be worth watching the whole time.
Yeah, and I think it's fun because you have some teams that are ascending and other teams that are starting to fall back, and watching where that transition occurs is such an interesting moment in the NBA. Sort of the passing of the torch, the changing of the guard. And it feels like one of those seasons where we have a couple teams that are on the cusp that are really going to arrive, and a couple teams that are probably at the end of their run.
And I'm going to float this idea. I've never mentioned this specifically before, but if Warriors fans are interested, I'm happy to pick out like one game a week, ideally on a night that the Warriors don't play, and be like, hey, if you want to kind of figure out like where all this is going, I'm happy to pick one out, because almost every week there's going to be a good test for one of these other 7 teams.
Yeah, I'm worried that you don't have enough podcasts to do at this point, and that you're not covering enough of the NBA. So I think that really covering some other teams here is essential. I'm kind of worried that you haven't already jumped on that already.
Is there anything else that you feel like we need to discuss from this game?
No, I think that just keeping perspective, we get these glimpses of what this team can be. And it's hard during some of the less intense games or during some of the less focused stretches of this team to sort of keep the faith. But I think that these moments should give Warriors fans confidence that as we get to the playoffs and the end of the season, we are going to see another level from this team, that they really do have this next gear that they can kick it into. And when they do, it's really frightening, like we saw tonight in the first quarter.
And my closing thought is similar to that, but it's a reminder that while I understand it in this game, given it's the Clippers and everything else, I think this, for me, this was a reminder for why the Warriors need to be full strength in the playoffs, because this team can do damage against anybody, but this, when you start to thin the ranks a little bit, it's going to be a problem. So just take off the risk, do what you're going to need to do most of the time. You know, like if you lose one game, it's no big deal, but make sure that you're healthy, because not only do these fans want it, but this team's legacy is entirely defined by a couple weeks in May and June.
Very well said.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. And it's still amazing to me that we deliberately scheduled to start this podcast at 1 a.m.
Hey, we're making the most use of our hours. It's going well.
Thanks again to Adam Wardson for taking the time late in the night or early morning to do the podcast. You can read him at the Fast Break blog, which is blogs.mercurynews.com/warriors. You can also follow him on Twitter at @GSWFastBreak. And great talking with him. This was a very impressive performance by the Warriors. I actually didn't really have that much to say about it other than, you know, talking about it for a while in the Twitter NBA show, is that because the Warriors were just really, really good. And the Clippers did some things that they can correct, but the Warriors also missed a ton of shots. Also, since I brought up the Twitter NBA show, it's the thing that Nate Duncan and I are doing, and a lot of them will happen to coincide with Warriors games because we're trying to do national games and the Warriors are on national TV a lot. There's also a ton of fan interest. So hopefully you watched it live. We do halftime shows and then postgame show after both games, which usually Golden State is the second game. So that works out relatively nicely. And if you want to watch it after the fact, we did a halftime show, postgame show, you can. You can go to periscope.tv, and then Nate's handle is NateDuncanNBA, which is exactly the same as Twitter, and then you can watch our old stuff, because any video that's on Periscope that's public is up forever, so you can take a look at it. It basically a dunked on episode on this game and everything else that we did. It's a lot of fun, and also for that, which is different for us, we do live question and answers through Periscope, and we do stuff through Twitter, so you can check that out. But a lot going on. Definitely going to have a podcast tomorrow night on Warriors Jazz, a game that lost a little luster since George Hill and Rodney Hood are going to miss it. Derek Favors is also already out because he's out. But it'll still be notable in many, many ways. Fun to see Rudy Gobert and so many other players that I like and I think a lot of other people enjoy watching. So that will be tomorrow. If you have any feedback, good, bad, indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. My last name is LeRoux. And then DannyLarue on Twitter, just @DannyLarue. And we'll be back tomorrow night, and hopefully it'll be a little bit earlier, because since the time zone, the game will actually be a little bit earlier. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.